The prelude today is Nocturne for Horn and Piano by Glier. Let me get that started.
Good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Alice Mann and my pronouns are she, her, hers. I am the Director of Religious Exploration here at Prairie. Prairie aspires to be both open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, though we recognize that we all have biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep trying, to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender identity, family structure, age, or abilities. Since we don't have our name tags on, we'd like to invite you to add your pronouns to your name in Zoom. Introducing yourself with your pronouns is a great way to challenge the norm that these should be assumed and to create a space for everyone, no matter how they identify. Click on your picture press the three dots in the upper right and click on rename to add your pronouns. We have a few announcements. See the emailed order of service for additional events. Our shared offering is with the Catalyst Project, a community of up to four single moms and their kids who are experiencing homelessness. In partnership with the founders, Susan and Anna Donahoe, the families gain access to permanent housing and other support services while living community style in a house on Madison's east side. Our Sunday service on October 31st will be our annual All Souls Day service, where we remember those who have passed. The numbers look good thus far for having the service in person, but please watch the news and our website after Tuesday for more information. The pledge drive is underway, and we will have a testimonial from Ron Fry and Barbara Chatterton Fry today. Now we'll have the chalice lighting read by Kathy Converse.
From the Unitarian Community of Rio de Janeiro, we light this flame as a reminder of our mission of being a light of the world, in unity with those who came before us, with whom we are a spiritual family. We shall be able to commit to the building of a community of free faith beyond geographical limits and personal beliefs. May we be a shelter to all who need it the most. Amen.
And now we'll have the opening music, number 34, Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire. We will now have a moment of silent meditation. Now we will have a reading, We Are One by Hope Johnson, read by Karen.
Karen, you're muted.
We are one, a diverse group of proudly kindred spirits, here not by coincidence, but because we choose to journey. We are active and proactive. We care deeply. We live our love as best we can. We are one, working, eating, laughing, playing, singing, storytelling, sharing, and rejoicing, getting to know each other, taking risks, opening up, questioning, seeking, searching, trying to understand, struggling, making mistakes, paying attention, asking questions, listening, living our answers, learning to love our neighbors, learning to love ourselves, apologizing and forgiving with humility, and being through grace, creating the beloved community together. We are one.
Today's presentation is UU, the UN, and You by Rev. Matt Aspin, which relates to the sixth principle, the goal of the world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
Good morning, everyone. I am the Reverend Matt Aspin. My preferred pronouns are he, him, and his, and it is good, as always, to be with you this day. As I appear in front of you today, on this day that is designated as UN Sunday, I'm about to explore a question that I really don't yet have a great answer to. The reason I don't have an answer is that this is a big, hairy, vexing, deep human problem that people have been trying to solve for centuries with little evidence of complete or lasting success. We've made steps, we've made progress, but at the end of the day, I don't think anyone can say we've completely solved for it yet. Which is what makes it an interesting question to me. And based on the history of the people I've met that make up this community, I'm guessing maybe some of you are interested in wrestling with this question too. The question I'm wrangling is this: is it possible to create a system that rebalances the power between people or groups in a way that truly benefits all equally? When the program committee suggested that I might consider having today's program be focused on UN Sunday, I was intrigued. I know a bit about the UN, mostly from snippets I've heard on the news over the years about one of the many endeavors they undertake around the world. I thought perhaps my research into how this body came to be, what it has learned over the years, and how it currently operates might provide fodder for this question that I've been wrestling with in one form or another for so long. The United Nations is an international organization founded in 1945 in the wake of a horrific world war, the second such war that had happened in its many decades. Currently made up of 193 member states, the UN and its work are guided by the purposes and principles contained in its founding charter. Their website describes the UN as one place where the world's nations can gather together, discuss common problems, and find shared solutions. It's pretty easy to hold up the successes of this institution. While there have surely been many deadly conflicts over the decades since the UN was formed, it seems likely that its aspirations, collective intentions, and ongoing dialogue have helped the disparate countries of this world come together to find compromises in ways that have helped its members find better ways forward as opposed to war. And I know they have certainly helped to save many lives through their humanitarian relief efforts. But as I prepared for today's talk, though, the one thing I wanted to make sure was that I also reviewed the criticisms of the UN. The biggest thing that jumped out at me was the fact that the five most powerful nations that make up this body currently have veto power over any initiative that the collective puts forward. And there it was. The mechanism that ensures the powerful, no matter how high-minded their ideals may be, are currently insured of maintaining their power. The generation that came of age in the 60s challenged us to imagine a world free from war, a society built on peace and love. And then maybe the free love went a little too far, and we kind of lost our way on the path to their highest visions. Steps have been taken in the direction of many of the dreams imagined in those heady days. Equal rights for women, civil rights for all, the idea that we judge folks by the content of their character first and foremost beyond anything else. But somewhere along the line, the power structures that this generation was rebelling against reestablished themselves, as history tells us over and over tends to happen without constant vigilance. Equal rights became freedom to do whatever one wanted without consideration of consequences to the larger whole. And we find ourselves today a far cry from the highest imaginings of that generation. Idealism possesses the same risks as any other ism. My partner's son, Aiden, is working on a project for school right now of his own choosing, where he's going to compare and contrast an event from history and its modern day counterpart. He chose to compare the Boston Tea Party and the start of the American Revolution with the Black Lives Matter movement. He's currently filming a scene where he overlays the Boston Massacre with the standoff in Ferguson, Missouri. In a chilling reminder of this tendency I'm describing, the scene splits from the powerful redcoats firing on their own citizens that were demanding nothing more than equal representation, to the scene of those same colonialist descendants dressed in military-style battle gear, with guns drawn against Black and brown citizens of the idealistic country that they created that were demanding nothing more than the same dang thing. Problems we keep creating always come back to power. Who has it, how it is maintained, and how it is wielded. Now, I know that there are some in this community that are concerned about the risks in ceding the role of minister too much power. I couldn't agree more. I implore you not to grant me any power. I don't want it. I don't need it. I'm not here for the power. I'm here for the possibility. I had power in my roles in corporate America, and I could easily go right back to it if you decide to send me on the way at the end of this year. I had positional power. I had enough title and money to be able to position myself around tables that granted me power over decisions that were made in my organization and in my community. I don't want that. Hoarding power within the current system today feels like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. The community leaders emerging in the world today are screaming a cry to the power brokers and saying it is the concentration of power that is leading us off the cliff. Just as it has always been and always will be until we can find a better way forward. Our UU churches, communities just like this one, have long been the testing and training grounds for our democracy. We attract folks that are inspired by our principles and the vision that world that adherence to these ideals hopes to make possible. But it's becoming clear that even in our faith tradition, founded as it is on the ideals of democracy and human worth, remains shackled by the same human quest for power as any other institution. But because we are who we are, we remain committed to consistently going back to the drawing board to see if we can envision something even better. I am currently engaged with a group of about 20 ministers that have been tasked with examining some of the current power structures within the UUA and within our congregational polity system, considering what's working and what could be better, and drafting recommendations for systemic change that could be implemented to make our association more equitable, stronger, and better positioned to respond to the new challenges we are facing today. I've begun to bring to this group many of the lessons that this community has already begun to teach me. One of those is be vigilant about who is granted power. But the question I keep asking, which I borrowed from Peter Block's book, Community, are two questions, are, what is the story we keep telling ourselves about the problems we can so easily articulate? And then the much harder question, what is our contribution to the very thing that we are complaining about? These are the questions I will be challenging you to consider as we continue to move forward together. What are the problems that still exist in the ways this community operates that keeps us from creating the better world we all imagine might be possible? Here's some truth. The way we are currently structured, those of you with access to the most money still have much, if not all, of the power in this system. It's pledge drive season, and you are all currently being made to make a financial pledge to support the future of this institution. The collective over the past year has said, we think we want and need a minister to help support this community. I was talking to Rosemary Dorney the other day, one of the longstanding members of this place. And she articulated to me quite eloquently how this community became so successful as a lay-led entity over the years. But then she also noted how times had changed and there was less capacity for an institution like this to continue as it did, relying only on the contributions of volunteers. So maybe that's true. Maybe you do need a minister's support over this next portion of your journey. But the current reality is that this decision is ultimately in the hands of those with access to the financial resources needed to fund this position. And I am forced to wonder if it is that reality that is the debate we need to be having. One or two major donors can withhold their contributions, and the recent will of the collective can be overturned. This is the type of discussion that is both challenging and worth having. And I implore you to have it. It is the type of question I am doing everything I can do to ensure is safe for all to have within this community. What is our contribution to the very thing that we are complaining about? I was talking to another member of this community the other day. And I said I was holding up your covenant as a way to create a structure so that those with less power can feel safe inserting their voices into the conversation without risk of being blown over. This person said, there will always be some people who would probably not feel safe speaking their minds, even with that structure in place. So, while this may or may not be true, this is someone's perspective. And for now, I'm just going to lift up that person's voice for your consideration. Their voice has now been added to the conversation. Because that is the essence of the problem we are ultimately trying to solve for today in this ongoing experiment called Unitarian Universalism. How do we make sure that everyone's concerns are heard in community, not just those with the most power? As I reviewed the UN structure, I was really attracted to the role of Secretary General. Their website says, equal parts diplomat and advocate, civil servant and CEO, the Secretary General is a symbol of the United Nations ideals and a spokesperson for the interest of the world's people, in particular, the poor and vulnerable among them. If I'm doing my job well, I think this sums up the role that I should be taking in a community such as this. In the wider world, the citizens of Luxembourg and Fiji and Ghana are all impacted by the collective decisions made by the powers in this world, and all should have an equal voice. For as long as they don't, all of the things that the powerful do that have the potential to negatively impact the members of these smaller countries or less powerful countries will have no way of being redirected. I attended the monthly gathering of UU residents at the Capitol Lake Senior Living Community this past week and engaged in a vigorous conversation about the role of trust in our collective institutions in our society and how that trust seems to have significantly eroded in the past decades. It was one of the most honest conversations I've enjoyed in quite some time, surrounded by folks with far more life experience than I, wondering how things seem to have gotten so wrong in the world under their watch, and wondering if anything can be done to turn the tide. As we walked out, I expressed my appreciation for being invited to witness such a profound display of the ideals of freedom and of gathering and debate that our country was founded upon. A new acquaintance from one of the other local UU churches said, "Well, we can talk a lot, but we're too old at this point to do anything about the challenges we wrestle with." I immediately countered this belief with my own. I said, "Do you think I'm too old to have an impact? Because your conversation planted both the seeds of new ideas and the inspiration to remember that those ideas are worth continuing to struggle for. What if I take the seeds of your ideas from your conversation planted in my mind, and the energy and passion with which you shared them, and I pass these on to a young person in our community, and that young person goes on to contribute to a collaboration that finally finds the solution to all the challenges you were discussing? Don't ever discount your efforts. We humans never know what impact our little ripples will eventually have on the collective pond." On this UN Sunday, let us look wide-eyed at both the possibilities and the problems embedded in the systems that have been created to help facilitate our collective salvation. It is communities just like this one that I continue to believe will be the source of any new idea that could have the power to ensure this collective salvation. Former UUA President Peter Morales, in a video created for the 50th anniversary of Unitarian Universalism's involvement in the United Nations, said, "A relatively small denomination like ours should seize the opportunity to make our voices heard in what most of us think of as the last best hope for living together with tolerance, protecting our planet, and maintaining peace and security for all people." In recent years, among other things, the UUA's efforts have helped to successfully amplify the voices of LGBTQ citizens of the world in the decision-making processes of the United Nations. Conversations we are having in communities like this one do have the potential to be amplified in the larger world. As I held up in one of my earlier talks, Adrienne Marie Brown reminds us of the realities of fractals in nature. The large is made up of nothing more than the small, replicated at scale. Our task as Unitarian Universalists is today the same as it has always been: to continually learn from our mistakes and to consider new ways forward that can lead to better outcomes for all based on what we have gleaned upon the way. I am not here for the power. I am here for the possibility. And I am willing to bet that you are too. Blessed be, and may it be so.
We now have time for discussion. Please raise your hand via your camera or digitally to be called on, and then unmute yourself. Please remute yourself when you're done speaking. I see Mary Mullen.
Hi, well, as you were talking, Reverend Matt, about someone saying, well, I'm too old to have any effect, I thought about Sandy Haspel, who has been a member of our church. And talking to her, maybe a year ago, she said, "Well, every day I call someone a politician to give my opinion." And I thought, oh, that's pretty impressive. And also, I know that Judy Skog is another person who often calls our political representatives. I'm a person that doesn't like to use the phone, and so I feel really humble compared to these two members of our congregation. So doesn't matter your age, as long as you can use the phone, you can still do this.
And I don't think there's anybody on this call today that would say that you are not making massive inroads into making the world a better place. Thank you, Mary. It is those folks and folks like you and folks like everybody else here that inspire me to remember to just keep working at it.
Dan Prout.
Thank you. I appreciated the comment, Reverend Matt, that you made about the influence that we can have on younger people in our community. I remember when I was a teenager growing up in the family's church, the influence that my minister and other leaders in the church had on my thinking, and how inspired I was by them. And it's so easy to forget that we're not just a community of adults, but also a community of all ages. And you're right, the impact that we have on the youth in our midst is hard to appreciate, but it's very, very real. Thank you for mentioning them.
I think that's one of those things that I know I personally take as an article of faith. If we continue to gather together and wrestle with these things and create spaces that allow different generations to come together and to pass down and teach the next generation how to think for themselves and how to think critically and et cetera, I think that can't lead to anything but good things.
I see a hand from Kent.
Yeah, so I was, during your talk, Matt, I was thinking about one of the many crackpot political theories I have. A few people know that I have lots of crazy political theories, but one of them is that given the power of the United States, everybody in the world should get to vote in U.S. presidential elections. So that would at least distribute the power a little bit more evenly. And one of my other theories is that anybody who actually wants to be president is automatically not the kind of person who should be allowed to be president. So
those are the kind of ideas that just need to be continually brought forward and held up until they catch fire and move the needle. I love it.
I have some slightly less crackpot ones than those two, but anyhow, that was kind of what I thought of today.
I hope you'll bring those to one of the upcoming chats that we're having as a community. Alice, I think I saw Millie's hand.
Millie, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey there.
Good to see you again. It's good to see you again.
Thank you. And my pronouns are he, are she, her, and hers. And I was at the meeting the other day here at Capitol Lakes, where I live, and the meeting that Matt was referring to. I would like to say that this morning is reminding me that I really do not know who my ambassadors are to our other major countries. There are five of us. We have tremendous power and influence in our world. Who are our ambassadors? And maybe we as small congregations could start to let them know in some way about this trust building thing, which came out in our meeting the other day at Capitol Lakes. Trust, to me, is where it is. We have to trust each other if we're ever going to make any headway in sharing our love, our compassion, and our diligence in seeking to communicate. Thank you.
Thank you, Millie. I was over visiting with Carl and Paula Wacker, and they let me know that in the past, there have been members of Prairie that have been really connected to the UN. And I see that there's a few services that have been recorded and are available on the website in the past, speaking about the UN. I can say that there is, on the UUA's website, there is a whole section devoted to how congregations and individuals that are interested can get connected to the UU's presence at the UN and how we can get those messages through. So Millie, you and I talk all the time. I think you and I should lead that charge. You might make a great UN ambassador for us. Let's talk about that.
I don't see any more hands, but I'd like to invite Ron and Barbara to give their testimonial now, if they're ready.
All right, I think I'm, give me a thumbs up if you can hear me. Thank you. I did a little bit of reminiscing as I prepared for this presentation. And I remember back to when I was maybe 8 or 9 years old. And as a child, I learned through the church that I attended to use those orange UNICEF boxes at Halloween time. And you gathered up some coins and it went off to a good cause somewhere, about the gist of what I knew about it. But what I also remember is my dismay when somebody decided that UNICEF was not a good idea and that we shouldn't be supporting it. And those boxes were no longer available to me. I thought I was getting a great lesson as a kid to be able to help other people at Halloween rather than me just getting all that candy I wanted. So that part was upsetting to me. And I think it's kind of an example of what we're talking about. Somewhere there was somebody who made that decision that held that power and took it away from me. As a child, you accept that because there are people that are more mature and maybe can figure things out better. And I think a hidden part of that, maybe for another discussion, is that here we were, all these white people helping these people that are not white. I don't know that it was put to me that bluntly, but I think that's one of those things you need to wake up to as you go along. So one of the things to me that is so valuable about Prairie is that we can have the kind of discussion that's going on today and the Unitarian principles that allow for accepting of other people. And in this case, accepting that other people have power. So those things are a challenge. I need to be able to accept that there are people that don't like UNICEF. And I also wish, I don't know how to resolve any of those old issues, but I think the rare value is that we have a place that is so accepting of other people. When new folks come, they are welcomed with open arms, and it's not a false glib salesperson's guide to get your attention, but it's a genuine thing. We do support each other. Yep, we disagree on stuff, but we find ways to work that through. So it's a rare value, and it's one that Barbara and I really want to support.
All right, thank you so much. Now we have the closing music. All right, now it's to the closing words read by Kent.
Do not fear agitation, for agitation is the rhythm of life itself, to be put into motion, to be stirred. Do not fear the movements that decenter what you always thought permanent. You carry within the center of your understanding the compass to show you the way. Carry with you the love that will hold you, the vision that will guide you, the relationships to all beings and the world that will ground you. Go in peace and in gentle agitation to stir this world to the side of love.
And now for the closing music, Peace Train by Cat Stevens.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun.
Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world just won. And I believe it could be someday it's gonna come.
Cause I'm on the edge of darkness, and there rides the peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again.
Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun.
Peace train, sounding louder, slide on the peace train.
Crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss?
We are now going to stop recording and we'll move into the Joy's Concerns and welcoming of visitors.